From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. Coming up,
Republicans from Arkansas prepare to take part in next week's national convention with Donald Trump to become the party's nominee for president.
Two former presidents and a former British prime minister speak in Little Rock, expressing concern about growing divisiveness worldwide.
Arkansas gets a new supply of one of the three drugs needed to carry out lethal injections, but another deadline looms.
Meanwhile, the state opens an economic development office in Berlin.
For the week ending Friday, July 15th, 2016, this is KUAR's Week in Review podcast. I'm Michael Hiplin.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Chris Hickey.
That's just ahead. A big week is coming up as Republicans from Arkansas are traveling to Cleveland to take part in the Republican National Convention. Jacob, there's been a lot of talk about this, and in fact, it's been speculated, they probably say this every time, but that this might be the most watched national convention for the Republican Party to date.
Maybe some precedent to it. I mean, certainly everybody was really excited to watch Donald Trump in the debates. Even that time he decided to drop out of the debate, people watched him on TV. People have been watching his empty podium on national networks. They're so excited to see him. But, and he's promised to break the mold and not make it a boring, stuffy old convention, although there weren't a lot of big star power names compared to the Democratic convention, which is going to have people like Lady Gaga and Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad. There aren't those kind of people there, but Trump is promised it'll be pretty exciting. And in Arkansas, it'll be a little bit extra exciting, though. There's, I think, four high-profile elected officials expected to speak. Reporters got a chance to ask Asa Hutchinson about the GOP convention while he was on a conference call from Europe, which we'll get to later, but here's what he had to say about it.
Actually, I can confirm that I will be speaking at the convention. I expect it to be on Tuesday night in prime time. And so I've been in discussion with the convention managers and the Donald Trump campaign in that way. They're still waiting to release a final list of the speakers, and so we're anxious for that to happen. But I've been working on it for some time, and so I think it's appropriate for me to go ahead and confirm that I will be speaking at the convention.
Any idea what you're going to be speaking about on Tuesday night?
I'll let the Trump, well, I do, but I'm not going to talk about it now. I'll put it that way. I'm also pleased. I'm going to be speaking to a number of different state delegations while I'm there. I'll be active doing some media while I'm there. So my goal as I have the opportunity to go to the convention is help shape the debate, to help broadcast some of the successes in Arkansas, and obviously to make sure that we have a convention that will lay a good foundation for Donald Trump to run on in the fall.
And that same day, we also learned that our senator, Tom Cotton, junior senator from Arkansas, will also be speaking during the convention. And he had been touted as a possible vice presidential pick from Donald Trump, but Trump made that official today, Friday, that he is going to go with Governor Mike Pence from Indiana. But I guess this could be viewed as a chance for Cotton, who people have also speculated could be a presidential candidate in 2020, to really, for the first time, present himself to a national audience.
But in his own way, he has kind of been presenting himself to national audiences for quite a while now, especially in light of the Iran nuclear deal, which he's been quite a critic of, and been a frequent guest of national talk shows like MSNBC or Meet the Press.
Right. That's where he announced it, that he would be speaking at the convention.
Yeah, he was on Morning Joe that same day that Hutchinson had that press conference, and he was asked about speaking there, and he confirmed that he would be. But just to add on, there are two other Arkansans who will be speaking at the convention, our Attorney General Leslie Rutledge and former Governor Mike Huckabee. course, Huckabee, I think we all know, has been a presidential candidate himself, both in 2008 and this most recent election cycle. He's pretty well known to national audiences.
Although his initial run, he was more well known, perhaps having some initial success at least. This last election, he came in ninth in Iowa and dropped out after the first caucus.
That's true. I mean, it's obvious that his popularity has waned. But, I mean, I think he's still pretty well known among that Christian conservative evangelical base, which is, pretty significant chunk of the party. Leslie Rutledge, I mean, in her own way, I'm sure she's attracted the attention of national Republicans because she's in her administration, she's joined lawsuits with other states challenging the Obama administration on certain policies like immigration or certain EPA rules. And she's also been a part of the platform committee that was meeting last week, the Republican platform committee. So I don't know what they'll be speaking about, but...
Yeah, but significant. They're all getting primetime slots. I'm reminded of 1988 when we had a governor from Arkansas, Bill Clinton, who made what he wanted to be his big national debut and ended up bombing terribly. I remember watching it. I think he went on well more than an hour, and he had a big speech prepared, but really they showed audience clips, shots, and audience members just wandering around talking, not paying any attention. Then he got the biggest applause of the night when he said something to the effect of, "And in conclusion." So, but of course, then 4 years later, he came out leading the race for his party's nominee, went on to become president. So these are big nights. They can be big for candidates, and I'm sure that they're going to be putting a lot into preparing for their speeches.
And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, four Arkansans are speaking, given that we've heard recently with the kind of disunion in a way of the Republican Party over Donald Trump that, you know, a lot of Republicans are choosing not to attend. Like I heard, you know, an interview the other day they had on Morning Edition with Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona talking about, well, he's going to just spend more time with his family, just can't get behind Trump. And even given that, you know, Asa Hutchinson has been kind of critical in his own way of Trump, he's still kind of making that effort to, I guess, try to promote party unity in some fashion.
Well, I think Asa Hutchinson and people like him kind of speak to the fact that the Never Trump movement has always kind of been dead. If someone who is that critical of Donald Trump, as Asa Hutchinson was in the past, is at the convention saying, you know, making the case for him to be the president, I mean, you don't have a lot of hope if someone who is, you know, really critical of the guys is for him. And one more thing about Leslie Rutledge, we talked a little bit with some people with her office, and she said the content of her speech mostly will be, or spokesperson for her rather, said that it'd be talking about how Hillary Clinton, you can't trust her, in contrasting her to Donald Trump a little bit, but a lot about distrust. And all the Arkansas angle, I mean, I don't know that there's any relation to this, but you got to imagine in some way it'll be interpreted as a statement on Hillary Clinton's time in Arkansas.
Mm, yeah.
And the Arkansas Democrat Gazette had an article that came out last Sunday, which used an interview that Hillary Clinton had given, I believe it was in the 80s, talking about how much of her life came from her experiences in Arkansas, especially in terms of politics. So it'll be interesting to see if when Democrats meet the following week, if they, in the lead-up film that they show before the presidential candidate comes out, whether or not that shows any of her time in Arkansas, whether it gets, because she really hasn't at all played up her time in Arkansas. Of course, she's not a native from here, but that interview, which was for a profile that was never published, had her talking a lot about that. So,
and one thing to note, I mean, the political structure when she was in the state was much different, of course, than what we have now with Republicans being in power pretty much in every, you know, statewide elected office, as opposed to then in the 1980s when, you know, Democrats were largely in control.
And KUAR is going to have special live coverage of the convention from 7 to 10, Monday through Thursday.
Right. And on the topic of presidents, we had two former presidents come together in Little Rock, along with former British Prime Minister Tony Blair and three members of the Little Rock Nine. Bill Clinton, obviously, he comes back pretty regularly, but rare to have him along with George W. Bush. And Blair, it was his first time to visit Arkansas.
First of all, let me say what a pleasure and honor it is to be here, and my first visit to Arkansas and to Little Rock. And to say, as I was standing outside with all the scholars getting my picture taken in that baking heat, I didn't think there was anything that could make me feel affectionate towards the British weather.
Yeah, 100 degrees with the heat index outside. Though a strong storm would come in before that program ended, and Blair got another dose of Arkansas weather as a tornado warning was going off and the program had to be ended kind of abruptly. But he and the former presidents Bush and Clinton spoke in large part reflecting on changes that have come about in society, in political discourse, and really just the culture that you're now seeing.
Anyone who's in a position of leadership today, they're in a harsher environment. There's a lot of, there's a big wall of noise all around you. And that's why I think those of you who are prepared to take these positions have a certain courage actually in doing it, but it's absolutely necessary that you do it, because without people like yourselves, who do actually have good motives and a good heart in trying to make the world better, without people like yourselves stepping forward and engaging with these positions of leadership, then our world is going to go backwards and not forwards. So this is what I think we need today, and you need it here, but we need it in my country. I mean, you said there's been a lot of change here in America in the last few years. There's been a lot of change in my country in the last few weeks. But I want to get to the stage where people once more engage in a debate that is civilized and decent, and where people accept that they can disagree but still find common ground, because that's in the interest of the country.
Now, the group they were speaking to, that was 61 graduates from the Presidential Leadership Scholars Program. It's a partnership with four presidential libraries, including the Clinton Library here and George W. Bush's library. Clinton also talked about how people are now, the culture of social media is impacting politics greatly.
We live in a Snapchat, Twitter world, which people form these images and react in a hurry. And this is good, that's bad.
President Bush also talking about that and just the challenges given today's political environment and difficulties for those who are leading.
I think it's really important in life to forgive. If you bear grudge, then you can't be a leader. If you enable someone who disappointed you to be center of your life, then a outlook will be pessimistic by the very nature of not forgiving. And so, yeah, there's going to be disappointments. All of us has disappointments. And the question is, when they happen, how do you deal with them?
And here's a little bit more from President Clinton.
We can embrace our diversity because we're smart enough to figure out that one of America's greatest assets, for example, is that we have the youngest, most diverse workforce in the world, and the world is not going to get less globalized no matter how much you try to make it so. On the other hand, it's hard for some people to know what the rules are, what the economic rules are, what the social rules are, how to make their way in the present, much less how to guarantee their kids can make a way in the future. So what we should be doing is trying to tell people how more people can claim the advantages that have put you in these seats today, and how we can do it together. Instead, what we seem bent on doing is building resentment against people that disagree with us on anything, maybe that look differently than we do, or pretending that we'd really be better off if we separated out more by religion or culture or race. I'm always, it's the almost semi-political thing I will say, but I'm always kidding President Bush. He may be the last Republican president who wasn't afraid of immigrants. That is, he would have been happy to go with me. Yeah. He would have been happy to go with me to South Texas and let us have a debate about what the best economic policy was for first-generation immigrants. And he would have trusted himself and what he believed to think that he could get enough of those votes to win. And it's like me, I'm happy to go into places where there are no Democrats left among white working class people, because I was one of them as a child. And I don't think they should be left out and left behind. And I think we got to get back to that. This idea of delegitimizing people as people because we disagree with them politically or because we're in a different place than they are economically or socially now is crazy. And we got a good model now, a fresh one. We always need new models. The police chief in Dallas, Texas. He is our model, right? That African American in law enforcement who lost a child to mental illness, crime, and violence between the community and the police, and stood up both for the reforms necessary for all Americans to feel safe when they walk outside and they're not breaking the law, and the necessity of maintaining safe streets and safe neighborhoods and a future we can all share. We need to, every American needs to learn something from that. Living with venom and bile in your heart and thinking of ways to demean people just because they disagree with you is a very dumb way to run a railroad. The best way to take advantage of all these differences is to do what you do. Sit in groups, have debates, and figure out some way to get the show on the road.
And I'll play one more cut, at least right now, from this gathering. And the Little Rock Nine were also, or three of the Little Rock Nine were there, as I mentioned. And maybe we'll come back at the end of the program and share one long clip from them. But before we move on, I did want to play one more cut here from Tony Blair. And this was a really small group. This was an invitation-only event. It was the 61 graduates from this program of future leaders, including two Arkansans, but maybe 200 people. It was in the auditorium of Central High School, but it actually wasn't even using most of the auditorium. It was mostly just a group of seats clustered there on the stage and at the very edge. But one more clip here from Tony Blair, just talking about how things have gotten to the way they are today.
The way the debate happens today is in a much more fragmented way than before, and in a way that lends itself much more to partisan exchange rather than trying to find common ground. And this is a very important thing because, you know, the technology and the way we communicate today is just a fact. So, I mean, you can like it or not like it, it doesn't really matter, it's with us. But one of the first things you learn as a leader in politics, but I think in any walk of life, is that those who shout loudest don't necessarily deserve to be heard most. Right. But the way our debate goes at the moment is there's a lot of loudmouthing in the way that the debate takes place. And what that does, particularly when the traditional forms of media have then become fragmented, and you get people locked in their own circle, where they communicate within their own circle, and they more or less, they increase their own sense of identity and belonging, but within a circle that's quite narrow, right? That is, I think, something that then discolors the whole of the debate and makes it much more difficult to have in a way that is constructive.
Well, you know, it's not so surprising, I guess, that since it's an invite-only crowd, that everyone is pretty cordial and seem to agree with each other on a lot of these fundamental issues, but for Bush and for Blair particularly, like this past month and the next one, are pretty significant maybe to their legacies. There's some 9/11 reports that are going to be, or pages of the 9/11 report that's going to be declassified. Report came out in England, you know, and the reports are basically showing Well, we haven't seen them all, but I mean, it's kind of accusing both of them of lying about the reasons for the Iraq war, talking about things like torture. I mean, so they might want people to be civil, but these are some pretty serious subjects.
I find that especially interesting in light of the comments from Bush that you played there, kind of advocating for forgiveness of, of people. And I kind of wondered if he was being a little reflective of his maybe past policies and maybe promoting that stance with leaders that, and, you know, he might want that bestowed upon him.
He even said to at one point, well, I did the best I can. So I think that is that history probably won't judge them very kindly.
Well, even like Bush's thing with it was you're either with us or you're against us. And that's the total opposite of what they were just talking about. It seems in that discussion, or Clinton anyway, saying we all need to be able to sit together and respect each other. Well, that's is there black, you know?
Yeah. Well, certainly when you're an ex-president, you can get away with a lot more, or well, not get away with a lot more, but say more of what's on your mind, or at least make decisions that aren't purely political.
Because he's not at that point having to try and pressure anyone. He talked about frustrations in dealing with Congress, and they wouldn't go along with reforms that he wanted. So, yeah, it is a lot easier to, once you're retired, to kind of sit back and opine and talk in a totally different way.
I was wondering, did they talk about Donald Trump at all?
You know, they really didn't get into by name candidates very much, but more when you hear Blair say, you know, who talks the loudest, of course, Trump, really, that's what many people have been saying about him and just the tone that he projects. But we'll come back, and as I said, at the end of the program, we'll share the thoughts of the Little Rock Nine. But meanwhile, we learned this week at that same conference call you were sitting in on, Jacob, that Arkansas has gotten a new supply of one of the three drugs needed to carry out lethal injections. We haven't had an execution carried out in 11 years, and one supply the state bought a year ago had expired.
Yeah, I think it expired last month, and the Department of Correction announced they got a new supplier and told the governor this week that they got the new supply of this one of the three drugs, a paralytic that is used, I think, in the first stage of lethal injections. But there's another deadline coming up in January. One of the other drugs is supposed to expire. Governor Hutchinson credited a new state law that allows the state of Arkansas to keep the manufacturers and suppliers of lethal injection drugs secret from the public and secret from the inmates that will be executed as well. Their argument has been all along that that state secrecy law is unconstitutional and also that it violates a previous agreement the state had made with inmates promising to disclose the contents. The state has decided they're going to break that promise to the inmates. And the argument is it's hard to assess what's going to happen when you don't have all the information about the drug in terms of if it's going to lead to cruel and unusual punishment. Besides the drug expiring, the state Supreme Court kind of had paved the path for this to continue. They ruled that that new state law is constitutional. However, it's not going to go formally into effect until they address the eight death row inmates who are petitioning for a rehearing on that issue. That has to be settled first before the Supreme Court can then tell the Attorney General that they can set dates for the execution. The Attorney General is going to recommend names and dates, and the governor ultimately sets them. But here's Governor Asa Hutchinson commenting about when those kind of when executions may begin.
I certainly would expect to set dates before January, absolutely. It's been way too long and painful for the victims and their families. And we would set the dates without any undue delay. But again, as to how many requests are sent by the Attorney General remains to be seen. As to whose dates will be set remains to be seen, and the specific time frames. But it is my job as chief executive to faithfully execute the laws, and once I've received the request from the Attorney General, we'll begin setting dates, and assuming that we get that letter in the near future, it would certainly be before January.
Hoyt Purvis, who I was just on Arkansas Week with, he's a journalism professor at the University of Arkansas. He seems to think that there won't be any executions by 2016 with additional legal challenges and drug supply issues, but we'll see. Here's, you know, while Asa Hutchinson's been in Europe for the past week or so doing some economics missions, he calls it a trade mission to try to attract investment and trade to Arkansas. But there's also been, of course, a lot of domestic unrest over issues of race relations, which aren't just about police officers using excessive force and violence. It's also just about the larger issue of the criminal justice system. I asked Asa Hutchinson about, I said, does he believe that there are any racial biases at play and who receives the death penalty in Arkansas? There are 34 people on death row, 18 are black, 16 are white. Despite only 16% or so of the population being black?
That's the kind of question that is resolved by constitutional challenges to convictions. In each of the instances that are before the court, the Supreme Court now that has been affirmed and that we're waiting the mandate on, there has been no constitutional issue raised that has been found to have merit by the court. And therefore, again, it's my duty to execute the law based upon the Supreme Court's review and affirmation of the convictions. You know, in terms of more broad criminal justice reform, you know, it is a very legitimate point of evaluation to make sure our criminal justice system is working fairly, and that we're incarcerating the right people, and there's not any racial bias in our system. And so I hope that, you know, that we continue to debate it and try to get it right, and that we listen to each other whenever there's legitimate concerns that are raised.
So sort of some echoes of Bill Clinton's sentiment there to be respectful and listen to everybody's perspective is genuine.
And it struck me as a pretty lawyerly response in terms of just, you know, he deferring to the courts to opine about whether there is a, you know, a racial bias in sentencing.
Especially with an attorney general's office in Arkansas that is so aggressively challenging courts all over the country.
So this is the third international office that the state has. Why Berlin?
Yeah, this week Governor Hutchinson has been at a few different countries in Europe trying to generate economic leads, either trade between countries, just investment dollars, bringing businesses here. The reason why Berlin for this international office, the other ones in Japan, ones in China, is that the European Union, of course, is one of the biggest economic players on the globe, and at the heart of that is Germany, the largest producing country in Europe. So that's the reason for Berlin. The governor also went to a London air show with along with some airport officials from Little Rock and Northwest Arkansas. So, you know, that's kind of a hallmark of Governor Hutchinson's tenure in office. One of his campaign promises was to personally go out there and solicit business, saying we need to market Arkansas as a brand to all these countries that might not be familiar with us. Other states are doing it, so we certainly need to do it too. We already have economic development officials in Europe, but this will be a dedicated office along with a new dedicated employee. Can't remember his first name, but Mr. Schnitzler, so appropriately German. He's a German national. They picked him because he's familiar, supposedly, with European businesses. Not so much, however, with Arkansas businesses, or at least Mike Preston, the Arkansas Economic Development Commissioner, hopes to bring him to Arkansas soon so he can become better acquainted with the needs of Arkansas businesses.
Do you know, is he a full-time Arkansas employee, or is it a contract thing?
Yeah, I think he's full-time, only working for the state of Arkansas. Mike Preston said that a lot of other states that have these type of offices or employees, that oftentimes they contract with a firm where the firm could represent 15 different states. So they thought it'd be better to have one guy who's only supposedly representing just one state, Arkansas, so there wouldn't be a conflict of trying to attract different businesses.
And is there a history? Do you know? Have we had offices beyond, you mentioned China and Japan, but I mean, have we done this in the past and closed them. Is this a reopening or is this a new step?
I just learned today also from Hoyt Purvis, second time he'll be mentioned, that there used to be an office, I think he said in the late 60s or 70s in Brussels, which is the real capital of the European Union, that doesn't exist anymore. But the other reason for Berlin and Germany is that Germany is the largest of the European nations that trade with Arkansas. I think there's 20 or so that have some direct tie, or 20 businesses or so that have ties to Germany in Arkansas.
Well, that's always the great thing about going on AETN with Hoyt Purvis and Ernie Dumas, the incredible institutional knowledge that they bring.
I guess the only other thing that's kind of relevant is the governor talked a little bit about Brexit, which everyone kind of talks about as bad for the world economy. But the governor saw a silver lining for Arkansas in that the European Union now has a weaker negotiating position than they used to. They're looking maybe for some additional trade or investments.
So Brexit helps Arkansas.
Maybe. I don't know.
According to ASA.
Yeah. All right. Well, on the topic of race, maybe we can close out the podcast here with the Little Rock Nine. As I said, three of the Little Rock Nine were taking part in the gathering with the former presidents and the prime minister. And speaking separately, the three, Minnie Jean Brown Trickey, Ernest Green, and Carlotta Walls Lanier spoke with the group. And then all of them were together when the presidents and prime minister were speaking. But Minnie Jean Brown Trickey and Ernest Green really talked about how the image of racism and what you saw in 1957 with Governor Orval Faubus sending out the Arkansas National Guard to prevent the integration of Central High. That was ordered after the Brown versus Board of Education decision. Then President Eisenhower sending in the Army to enforce the court order. And Minnie Jean Brown Trickey really began talking about how that image played nationally. And then these students who thought they were going to be among 80 or so students that fall ended up just being the 13 of them. But what the images of especially the photos of angry white mobs outside the school and the fight between state and government, what kind of impact those images had?
How many young people do you know who caused a president to act? And I think 14 and 15-year-old kids caused a president to send troops. But he would not have done that if we hadn't come back, if we had said, oh, this is too hard. Right. The mob is too dangerous. I'm really scared. Well, we were really scared. But we did come back. And so I tell young people, you can make presidents move.
If you have a good attorney general.
When you. Well, that helps. But the other thing is, our lawyer for federal court was Thurgood Marshall. And so he explained very clearly the whole idea of constitutional conflict. I'm going, oh my God, a constitutional conflict. You know, there's a picture of me waving because I heard that term. I'm lying, but it sounds good. But I mean, we became very sophisticated very quickly because we had people explaining things to us. I mean, we used to have so many lawyers around us. We women, everybody said, well, there were no women. Oh, yes,
no, there were.
There were
women.
We had women, female role models, and the top of the line legal minds. So we became very knowledgeable really quickly. Outside the school, I mean, we're learning a lot of stuff, but it wasn't. Actually, I don't remember learning anything when I was here. But I'll lie and say I did.
We learned a lot outside.
But it was outside of
right.
Lots.
Yeah, we grew up fast, is what it boiled down.
Well, so one of the things we talk about in the program is the way in which those experiences we have in our lives shape our values and influence us really for the rest of our life and the choices that we make. And of course, we talk about that in the context of leadership. I mean, is that something you were aware of, that by by going through that experience that it influenced you in your further education and your career?
Well, I think certainly. I mean, each of the nine went on to college, mm-hmm. and we all graduated. A lot of degrees. There's a doctor out of the group, Terrence Roberts.
And Melba.
Yeah, we got a lot of honorary doctorates. Just don't get sick around us. We can't do anything. You know.
The honorary flu.
Right.
When I graduated, it turned out that Dr. King was speaking in Pine Bluff, which is, a few miles from here. And he came up and sat with my family. And unbeknownst to me, until the end of the ceremony, that Martin Luther King was in the audience. Wow. And I always say I got to be one of the few Americans that Martin Luther King Jr. attended his high school graduation. I'm in rare company. We had a lot of moments in which, as many said, we had to grow up fast.
And again, that's the Little Rock Nine, Ernest Green, Carlotta Walz Lanier, and Minnie Jean Brown Trickey, speaking to the 61 graduates of the Presidential Leadership Scholars Program.
And also in Arkansas news this week, we had some more education issues with federal desegregation lawsuits. It's amazing that stuff is still going on. We still don't have these issues resolved. The State Board of Education voted in the instances of El Dorado and the Jacksonville school districts, both which are under federal desegregation orders, that they will allow school transfer for some students between districts. The federal court order seems to suggest they shouldn't be doing that because that's going to lead to segregation.
So nearly 60 years later, still the issue continues. Well, with that, we'll wrap up this week's Week in Review podcast for KUAR. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Chris Hickey.
Chris Hickey is responsible for the theme song you hear each week on the podcast.
Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
I sing that song. You can, if you're not already a subscriber, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. KUAR is an editorially independent service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock.